we present the News Quiz with your chairman, Simon Hoggart.
Hello, and welcome again to the News Quiz. We start with a classified ad seen in the Hemel Hempstead Gazette, read by Harriet Cass.
Bricklayer's 8-inch stool, recently saved from dump. Lovely dark mahogany colour with slight curve. £15.
Thanks, AK Fenn, for that. Let's read the teams. Please welcome first, on my right, Linda Smith and Francis Ween. And opposite them on my left, Alan Corran and Rory Bremner. Linda, why is there summit up with Bush and Blair this week?
Oh, well, this is because Tony Blair has flown out to America to see George Bush to have a bit of a meeting about the war and, you know, the aftermath and everything. And actually, Bush was a bit disrespectful, I think. He kept Tony Blair waiting around for hours and hours and hours. And it was awful for him because he's not allowed on the sofas. So he was just sat there in the car with the window opener crack. In this weather, it's wicked, isn't it? So that's what's going on there, to talk about how lovely it's going to be at the end of the war in Iraq, because, well, good news for the Iraqis is that, I think it's Dick Cheney's old company, isn't it?
Halliburton have got the
contract to reconstruct Iraq, and I do think that's a very good idea. You should always book tradesmen by personal recommendation. because you can come on, they just pick someone out of the yellow pages, you know. Some Herbert would turn up in Baghdad, leave 3 bags of cement there, then clear off to Iron Apple with a mate called Lee for 3 months. So, I think that's very important. So that's what that's about.
They had this press conference where Bush said the war was going slowly but surely, and he then started speaking slowly but surely. It was quite extraordinary. He literally said, he said, Saddam Hussein will be removed. And he carried on. It reminded me of the Falklands War. Remember that MOD press officer, Ian MacDonald, whose name is I Speak Your Weight? And Bush has started talking like that. I didn't quite know what's the matter with him.
He's speaking above his weight, that's the thing. He's actually... But you have to wonder what Blair's getting out of it, actually, apart from the air miles, don't you?
Cherie really wants that decanter. She really
But also checking into Camp David, it must be like a hotel for him now. He has to check in. Hi, sir, do you have a reservation? Well, actually, I've got a lot of reservations, but... But he does get a reduction because he's part of their frequent fighter programme. But, I mean, yeah, it's a little bit difficult to win over Iraqi hearts and minds when their hearts are in one place and their minds are in another.
I think that's largely due to the cunning of Saddam Hussein, the way cunningly he's hidden all the residents in residential areas.
He said there are 72 nations are in the coalition.
Really?
Yeah. Who has said that today? I think we've... The government of Fiji must have sent a good luck card.
This week, Tony Blair flew out to Washington for a 2-day war summit with the president. The prime minister was said to have had a business-as-usual working dinner. So after they demolished their food, they stayed up all night and got bombed. 2 points to Linda Francis. Why was there no substance to an MP's white substance?
It's Geoffrey Robinson, MP, the former paymaster general. Or loan master general, in Peter Mandelson's case. But I think we have to tread a bit carefully here, because under English law, you're innocent until proven otherwise. I think even Geoffrey Robinson this applies to, incredibly.
I think he has been proven innocent. White powder was just, you know what you get left over from a tin of travel sweets? Always half of it is that white powder, isn't it?
He was interrogated by the police a few months ago on suspicion of drunk driving or something, and at some point a bag of cocaine floated into view. But they've investigated and they said they don't know whose it was or where it came from, and so they're not prosecuting, and he emerges without a stain on his character. Well, I mean, apart from all the stains that were there already, obviously, covered in egg and tomato and DTI inquiries. But he's always getting into scrapes, Geoffrey Robinson. Like sort of millionaire version of Just William. Had these wizard wheezes. I know, I'll buy a house for Peter Mandelson. And then it all goes horribly wrong, and his mum sends him to bed early.
Former Paymaster General Geoffrey Robinson has escaped prosecution after cocaine was found in the police van he'd travelled in. He still faces charges of driving around the road in an erratic manner, so there's still a chance he could be done for snorting at white lines. Rory, why are train guards dressing down this week?
Ah, this is because there's a train strike this week, or if you're listening to the repeat, there was another train strike this week. And so what they're doing is that Virgin and other companies are actually going to ask their staff to dress up as guards, so the administrative staff, which is astonishing because I didn't actually realise anybody was administering Virgin Railways in the first place. But it's actually quite a complicated structure if you work out how Virgin operates, because in fact you've got the guards.
Hold on. Are they guards or are they Saddam's elite Republican guards?
Well, you see, you've got the guards and then you've got the Fedayeen, who are fanatically loyal to Richard Branson. But what you have to remember is that most of the service is Shiite. But the guards have actually walked out for safety reasons. It's quite true, because if you walk out, then you won't get hurt, will you? So, and they're going to actually operate, because I did read this story. They say that if they use 100 of their staff, they can operate 60% of their normal services. So it's a normal timetable.
Office staff at a stand-in for rail guards in an effort to minimise the impact of a strike by the Rail, Maritime and Transport Workers Union. Commuters will notice little difference in their journeys. Apart from groups of people standing outside the carriage door smoking, a sign reading, "You don't have to be mad to work here, but it helps," and two photocopies of Darren from IT's arse. Alan, listen to this. Every fingerprint you make, Alan, every gene sample they take, who'll be watching you?
Oh, this is a filth. Yeah, the civil rights people are extremely upset because the technology having been discovered for everybody to go on a computer and have their DNA registered and their fingerprints registered. You're looking at me quizzically, Simon.
No.
If this is the answer about the bloke who built the biggest ball of rubber bands in the world, Mr. Jay Ason, took it into a plane above the Mojave Desert and hoped it would either bounce or explode, and it just broke, and he lost his place in the Guinness Book of Records, then I've cocked up. But I rather think...
No, but you do get an extra point for that.
I think that any bit I leave anywhere, hair, God knows, I left hair all over the world, or bogies or fragments of dandruff, anything left on a jacket, can now be punched in the central computer. And with immense police efficiency, if someone tries to steal the Tay Bridge, they will have collared me by the evening, having stuck a bag of Charlie in the back of my car. But it's simply that you don't have to be a criminal now in order to be treated like one. I've known this for a very long time.
Police officers are to be allowed to keep fingerprints and DNA samples from anyone they arrest, even if they're innocent, under proposals announced by the Home Office. In the early days, DNA was usually extracted from semen, often at every port they turned up at. We start round two with an item from the Billericay Weekly News.
Police are hunting a man in a dirty Mac who indecently exposed himself in a Brentwood clothes shop on March the 3rd. He's described as in his 20s and with short ginger hair.
Thanks to Robert Fletcher of Essex for that.
Ah, he receives a book token of this round of applause. Ah.
Linda, who's been putting the bite on their patients?
Bite on their patients? Dentists.
Mm.
Apparently, private dentistry is too expensive, and there's a big variation in what you can pay for the same treatment from different private dentists. So one end of, say a crown, you could pay £250 to £300 at one dentist, get a very good job done. You know, they do rearrange your teeth according to feng shui principles. Your molars in your luck corner and everything. And right down to 85 quid, for which you get Mad Frankie Fraser with a pair of pliers.
The Office of Fair Trading, they're encouraging dentists to be more open. And it's just wonderful to have them standing behind a dentist going, "Wider!"
Ever since they were privatised, they're more like hairdressers now. They all have these really naff salons with silly names to attract the public called Thrills with Drills. Adventures with Dentures.
And the sun that show videos, don't they? In the, above your head while you're lying
Jaws.
Back. A report from the Office of Fair Trading claims that patients who go to private dentists are often poorly informed and overcharged. One outraged patient said, "Vroom, vroom, 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 vroom." Francis, which unelected body has been voting not to be elected?
The House of Lords.
Hmm.
They've had an election, a by-election. Because you remember when Blair got in, he said he was going to reform and modernise House of Lords. It was all going to be new Lords. because it was also unfair. And it was much fairer to have it based on appointing people who once shared a flat with Tony Blair 20 years ago, which is what he did. But a few hereditaries survived, and one of them pegged out, as hereditary peers tend to do. And the only people eligible to stand were former hereditaries, the ones that Blair kicked out. And an incredible number of candidates. I think there were sort of 40 or 50 barons and 19 earls and 12 viscounts, and a duke, no less.
Well, 40 or 50 of them, but about 10 different faces between them, isn't it?
Well, it's Lord Ditchwater, or Ulswater, is that right? A former private secretary to Princess Margaret has been elected by a huge majority. And yet, he has a more democratic mandate than people like Fatty Faulkner and Derry Irvine.
And Melvin Bragg.
And Melvin Bragg.
And the other riff-raff that they have there.
Actually, it was a sneaky way that Blair got rid of a lot of those hereditary peers, because they had 30 words, didn't they, to explain why I should be a peer because. 30 words. Well, most of them, that, just writing their name at the top, they'd use up their go.
Campaigners for Lords Reform branded the by-election a farce. Lord Rick stormed out of the House, then stormed back in again by a different door, where his trousers shut down. Rory, listen to this.
Hooray for Hollywood! You may be homely in your neighborhood.
Be an actor, see Mr. Factor, you make your kisser look good.
Go out and try your luck, you may be Donald Duck. Hooray for Hollywood!
Well, this is the Oscars, obviously, so this question isn't for me, it's for my agent. And my director, and all the people I've worked with over the years. I've been told to keep this answer to shorter than 45 seconds, because they were all told that this year, because it's an exceptional Oscar ceremony this year because of obviously what's happening in the Gulf. And, you know, bearing in mind what's happening, I think unless you've actually been there, we can't possibly imagine the pain and the suffering that you go through when you can't decide what's the most appropriate thing to wear. But, you know, they got on with it. Actually, strangely enough, Al Jazeera didn't broadcast the Oscars on the grounds of... on grounds of taste. But Chicago was awarded, I think, best editing, wasn't it? Which really mystified me, because they still left in the bits with Richard Gere. But it was an extraordinary ceremony, under the circumstances. And that's, I think that's what it was about, the Oscars.
But they showed respect, because they didn't have a red carpet. That would be tasteless such a time for us. They had some sort of plum-coloured one. Tony Blair's old plum suit was revealed out, I think.
Well, everyone was going around wearing peace ribbons, and people saying, "Oh, who designed yours?"
Against the backdrop of war in Iraq, the 75th Academy Awards took place in sombre mood without the red carpet and with many guests wearing dark outfits. The red carpet was removed. Well, they didn't want an Allied carpet bombing raid. Oh, God, this is a good one. At the awards, Catherine Zeta-Jones clutched onto her 75-year-old golden statue, which makes a change. Alan, why is studying royals upsetting royal studies?
Oh, this is Andrew, who is knocking about with something in the Nuke of Fife. No, it isn't Andrew. Andrew is the university. I can't remember what the bloke's called. One of them is William, one of them is Harry.
He's called Darren.
But because he is wandering around St. Andrews, whoever the one is up there. Is it Harry, the one who's up there?
No, it's William.
It's William. Is that the one who's there?
Who's here?
No, he's the heir. Are we going to have a King William? Oh, right.
He's anyway. Yes.
Well, he's being followed by photographers, and the tabloids undertook not to pester him, but they can't resist this
crested buttock going up and down in the heather. And so... Everybody is deeply upset by this, and he may leave university.
Well, you
just hang around the palace, sort of watching videos and things. He's threatened to come down, as it were, from St Andrews.
Oh, but he's only doing history of art. I think you can get that degree through the post.
Well, history of art is really very easy, isn't it? I mean, you just lay the pictures in a row and date them. That's it. Start with Giotto and you end up with Tracy Amin and that's it, you can go home.
A recent escalation in the publication of paparazzi photographs of Prince William might drive him to abandon his studies at St Andrews, that and the fact that he seems to have inherited intelligence from his father's side of the family. William wants to be treated as an ordinary student and wants people to ignore him. And the royal bodyguard, the royal writer of the essays, the royal drinker of 15 pints of lager, and the royal wearer of the traffic cone on Friday nights. Before we start the final round, here's a recent excerpt from Classic FM.
Impotence affects as many as 10% of men, yet many are too embarrassed to talk to their GP about it. Call in complete confidence and with no obligation. And now, Mozart, music for the horn.
Thanks to Jonathan Lilly of Cambridge for that. Linda, who thinks she's smarter than other Norfolk broads?
It's Tricia, the genius Tricia, who does this show, she does this daytime telly show on subjects like when uncles marry and when turkeys attack. My husband's a cross-dresser, but he still won't do the washing up. And she's moaning about how people in Norfolk can't keep up with her intellectually, which would be a worry, really. And it's a terrible slight. You think of people from Norfolk. Well, Delia Smith from Norfolk. I mean, all right, I mean, she's a bit dull. She's a human form of beige, really, isn't she? But her recipes always work. So is that it?
Yes.
You know, she seems to have some idea that apparently doctors used to write... NFN on people's records, meaning normal for Norfolk. It's a terrible, terrible slur.
TV chat show host Tricia Goddard has appalled the inhabitants of East Anglia, suggesting in an interview that women in Norfolk were boring and intellectually inferior. A very upset Elaine Cookham of Great Yarmouth said she would refuse to watch Tricia's TV show, at least until someone explained how the evil spirits managed to get all those tiny little people inside the box. Another East Anglian woman said she could count the number of intelligent comments on Tricia's programmes on the fingers of one hand. So that's at least 17. Francis, listen to this.
Suicide is painless. It brings on many changes. And I can take or leave it if I please.
Was that Flanagan and Allen?
Francis, why was it a case of et tu, Caesar?
Well, the Italian police have reopened their investigation into the murder of Julius Caesar. Having about 2,000 years ago, he was found with a bag of cocaine on his back seat. They finally sorted out. Teams of forensic pathologists and psychological profilers and people like that have been visiting the scene of the crime and reading the autopsy report. Incredibly, that was an autopsy report. And they've decided it was suicide. I mean, we know he didn't actually stab himself, because we've all seen the play. He was stabbed by lots of senators, as we all know, and then he lay there saying, "Kiss me, Hardy. I could eat one of Bellamy's pork pies." But he deliberately engineered it. In fact, the Daily Telegraph had a report on it, and it said that... these professors of forensic whatnot diagnosed that Caesar had temporal lobe epilepsy, which can lead to very bad diarrhea. And the Telegraph says, "The investigators concluded that if that were the case, a man obsessed with his own image and dignity would not countenance losing control in public." Conjured up a really hideous image of the state of his toga. rather than have that happen to him, he deliberately ignored the soothsayer, saying, "Beware the IDS of March," and went off there knowing he was going to be killed, so he could collect on the life insurance, his family could.
Whereas if it was suicide, they wouldn't get it.
It was actually because of the diarrhea that he wouldn't stand up in the chamber.
That's why he wouldn't stand up. There was a commotion in his toga and he had to, he was rooted to the seat.
That's funny because Imodium sounds sort of Roman, doesn't
it? Doesn't it? I'm very worried that otherwise the motion would pass unopposed.
Colonel Luciano Garofano, commander of the Italian Carabinieri's Northern Forensic Investigation Unit, has concluded that Julius Caesar might have committed suicide, having decreed that a man who was stabbed 23 times in front of 100 witnesses had committed suicide. Colonel Garofano now plans to produce conclusive evidence that British sausages contain real meat. Some believe there are even more urgent ancient mysteries which remain to be solved, such as the reason for Peter Stringfellow. Rory, why does a season of mists prove fruitful for boys?
Now, this is the Italian scientists at the University of Modena, which is, I think, where the balsamic vinegar come from. And they've done a lot of research. They've been very busy. They've actually discovered that the best way to conceive a boy is to have sex in the autumn, preferably with a woman. And they've studied 14,000 births, which really goes a bit beyond curiosity, doesn't it? And they've decided that, in fact, 55% of the births were boys and 45% were girls. It makes sense, really, because autumn is always the season for nuts. But, I mean, it's so complicated now in conception, because, I mean, you know, you've got to check the temperature, you've got to check the calendar, check, you know, where you are in the cycle. I mean, you know, in Alan's day, it was just mirror signal manoeuvre.
And you've left out emergency stop.
Okay. That was when the clipboard hit the headboard. When I do this, execute the three-point turn. Autumn has always been known as the masculine season. It's not known whether the Prime Minister was conceived in the autumn, but it's taken as read that his conception was immaculate. Out of every 1,000 babies born in an average year, 488 are girls, 511 are boys, and one is Prince Edward. Alan, why are hawks hair-raising?
It's called Harry, and obviously it wants to get in the papers. I mean, if you've got a hawk and you want it to get in the Red Tops, you call it Harry, so they can all have Harry the Hawk. It's a hawk with a terrible record. It exploded a bouncy castle in Keswick by landing peremptorily. And at a charity do in Lincoln, it walked in several buckets of ice cream, which the children were going to have. These were underprivileged children, even more underprivileged if they ate it. So I've seen you never know where a hawk's been when it. But the third thing it did, and it's now been sacked, it's been taken out of the hawk circuit. It snatched a man's ginger wig. It had been trained, obviously not very well, to go for a woolly rabbit that its trainer was holding, but diving in low, spotted this bloke in a ginger rug, and it snatched it off. And I was delighted. We at Bald Pride hate people who wear rugs. We burned our rugs years ago. Man needs a wig like a fish needs a bicycle, we used to say. And so I have come out, already come through, and mine is there. But this fool who didn't realise there were hawks about when he glued his hair on, got a surprise. Hawk was called Harry.
I love the idea that you had these three chances, which sort of assumes that the bird, A, has a sense of morality and a memory. He can think, well, I don't know, I fancy that wig, but I don't know, three strikes, sure.
The bird of prey, Harry the Hawk, the Liam Gallagher of the bird world, has been withdrawn from public performances after stealing a toupee from a spectator's head. The last time the public witnessed a ginger wig covered in birds, it was Robin Cook. Before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings the teams have brought along. Linda.
Ah, this is a cutting sent in by Peter Hawley. It's from The Guardian, and it concerns the proposed closure of the restaurant Le Bistro du Cœur in the heart of the Parisian red light district, Pigalle. This restaurant's run by local priests. It's a sad day, Michel, a stripper from a club on the red light boulevard de Clichy, told Le Parisien. The food was good, it didn't cost much, and the fathers never tried to push anything else down your throat.
As it's Mothering Sunday, several thousand residents of Hampshire and Dorset
have sent in this huge advert from the New Milton Advertiser. It says, Saturday the 29th and Sunday the 30th of March, Mother's Weekend. You're cordially invited to visit and take refreshments and to view the Hilton Park burial ground.
Rory.
Mine was sent to me, this is a topical one sent to me by Matt Hawksworth. It's part of a report attributed to Sky News this week. Umkhaza is a city similar to Southampton, UK Defence Minister Jeff Hoon said in the Commons yesterday. A British squaddie patrolling the town commented, he's either never been to Southampton or he's never been to Umkhaza. There's no beer, no prostitutes, and people are shooting at us. It's more like Portsmouth.
Alan.
Well, Thursday's Daily Telegraph, which says, following the decision by the General Municipal and Boilermakers Union to recruit workers in the sex industry, strippers, porn actors, lap dancers and the like, the GMB spokesperson was asked whether the union would intervene in a dispute between a prostitute and her client. She replied that, as with any other labour issue, they would endeavour to bring the two parties together and examine the position.
Thank you all, and let's now look at the final score, which are Linda and Francis 16, but Rory and Alan, this week's winners, with 1 point more. Oh. Before we leave you, here's an item from Geoscientist magazine.
An earthquake in New Zealand on the 24th of September 2001 shook the hill bearing the Southern Hemisphere's longest name. Tamata Fokatangi Hanga Koahuho Tamata He Pokai Finu Kitana Tahu. No casualties were reported, but several newsreaders were admitted to hospital.
That's mine.
Taking part in the news quiz were Linda Smith, Francis Bean, Rory Bremner and Alan Horan. The chairman was Simon Hoggett and the news was read by me, Harriet Cass. The chairman's script was written by Simon Littlefield, Paul McKenzie and George Poles. The panellists' trumpets were supplied by Marieke Good and the producer was Simon Nichols.
I know it's the last one in the series.
Is it? Oh, is it really?
Yes, you sound very, very hurt.
Yeah, I'm upset.
Well, I'm a bit upset. Really, it's the last one in the series. We should have been allowed to bring games in, really.
Well, I know of a good game you can play at home, Linda. All you need is to tune your wireless into Radio 4 tomorrow lunchtime when you can join in the literary quiz, quote-unquote, discussing how many listeners it takes to change a light bulb and discoursing on topics such as food, wine and laughter. It's much more fun than Snap. Tomorrow lunchtime, 12:04. Now, though, the topic is weather. The man in the know, Alex Deacon.
Thank you very much, David. Good afternoon. It's a fine and bright weekend for most of us at the end of what may well turn out to be the sunniest March on record. Tomorrow, most of us again seeing some sunny spells. We are likely to see a change, though, in the coming days, with rain spreading south across the country during Monday night and through Tuesday, before the fine weather looks like it's being set to return for Wednesday and into the end of the week. But let's get back to today, and apart from a few showers across the far north of Scotland, and just the outside risk of a shower across southern England, for most of us, it's dry with hazy sunshine. Thicker cloud, though, persisting across parts of East Anglia and south-east England, and here some mist and fog clinging to the coastline. And where that does cling, it'll stay quite chilly, but inland parts of England and Wales, temperatures up to 17 Celsius, possibly 18 or 19 in some spots. A little bit fresher across Scotland and Northern Ireland, here a top temperature of 12 or 13. Tonight, a touch of ground frost is possible in the north, but for most of us, temperatures staying above freezing. In the